one of the things I wanted to speak about was this idea that that all of the parashas and the stories of Yetzias Mitzrayim and all of the ideas of the Jewish people going through all of these travails, coming out of Egypt, Kriyas Yamsuf, receiving the Torah, we know that all of these ideas are also ideas that theoretically and also in psychologically, with their ideas that we can apply into our lives, and we can really gain something from ourselves. So one of the key themes of the parashas of this time of year that we can talk about now, and we can also talk about closer to Pesach, is this idea of the Jewish people breaking out of Egypt. And when they break out of Egypt, they then obtain freedom. There's a famous question that people ask, which is that what type of freedom was this freedom? They broke out of Egypt. They just went from being whipped and being told what to do. All of a sudden, after a little bit of wandering in the desert, then they go and they become, they get the Torah. And as a result, they, so to speak, take on the old Malchus Shemayim. They take on the yoke of heaven, which seemingly is another form of slavery. Hey, Bradley, how are you? I just saw you there.
Yeah, good. You're right.
Amazing. Amazing. What's going on?
Not much. Finished the school Shabbaton, like taking a bunch of year five kids to experience their first Shabbat ever in their lives. That was good fun.
That's unreal. Unreal. Very good. All right, we'll talk soon. But either way, let's go back to the idea that we said that the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is really something that we can apply to ourselves. And therefore, this process of breaking out of Egypt and then seemingly the contradiction to that freedom of receiving the Torah, let's try and discuss how we can apply that process to ourselves and how really we can take that, grow, and help that in our own freedom process and our own rededication to having that relationship with Hashem. So we'll start off with something very obvious, something very basic, something that a lot of people know. And even if we don't know, it's because we forgot from when we're in Yeshiva. That Rav Dessler talks about how the Jewish year is really just a spiral, how time isn't linear. It's not just going forward, 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 but instead we're re-going over the same ideas. And therefore, every time of year comes with its own spiritual energy. He also describes, and this is a bit less famous, that different stages of one's life has the same thing. As you go from being a child to being a teenager, from being a teenager to being an adult, seemingly there are certain energies one can tap into at different points along the station and really really get that energy that you're meant to get at whatever stage of life you're meant to be in. One of the famous questions that's asked in regards to Yetzias Mitzrayim and specifically Pesach is that there seems to be a stira between what we celebrate at Pesach and what we celebrate in these parishes and a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in I think it's right at the end in the sixth chapter, right near the beginning, I think the second Mishnah. It says, Ein lecha ben chayrin ela misha esek b'Torah. It says, there's no such thing as an ultimate free person unless you toil in Torah. So this raises a question that many people ask, which is that if the whole point of the Yetzias Mitzrayim, if the whole point of leaving Egypt was freedom, so then it was to no avail. They didn't actually get free. They only got free once they received the Torah later on. So what exactly is the celebration of Pesach? Really, Pesach, the celebration of freedom, should all be about Shavuot. And we know that's not true. When we celebrate Pesach, we call it Zman L'Cheresenu, it's the time of our freedom. But when we come to Shavuot, it's not called time of our freedom. It's called time of receiving of the Torah. So the question is, what's going on? Which one's freedom? And then once we work that out, we can apply it to ourselves. So the Mefarshim explain that really, there are two levels to freedom. The first level of freedom, which was accomplished on Pesach, was the idea that now I'm free to decide whatever I want. I'm free to decide my own future. I'm free to decide where I want to be, when I want to be. However, there's a deeper level of freedom, or a second level of freedom. That second level of freedom is the ability to do what's right, to do and implement what I want to do. So the first thing is the ability to do whatever I want to do. The second one is the ability to put it into practice. So when that comes to the Jewish people and the narrative of our national history, that meant the first stage was we're no longer slaves in Egypt. We no longer have taskmasters, and we no longer have to build bricks, and we no longer have to suffer like we did for the 210 years of Egypt. That's the first stage. Then after a bunch of walking in the desert and having the ability to do whatever we want, we could have theoretically done anything and gone anywhere. Then the next stage seemingly is that we accept upon ourselves our own kivun, our own derech. And when it comes to the national narrative, that was receiving the Torah. Then I can do whatever I want. Why is that relevant to you and I? So I think there's a nice way to boil it down. And with this, hopefully we'll start to see a approach come out that will really help us in our own self-development. I think the first point is, with these two stages, we said the first stage was that I have the ability to do whatever I want. The second stage is I have to implement a specific derech. So we all have different moments of clarity, and we have certain points where we distance ourselves from different averas, from different issues within ourselves, and we say, I don't want to be that guy anymore. When we do that, we have an Egypt moment. We have a Pesach moment. We separate ourselves from the avera, and we say that I understand that this is going to be negative for me, so I'm going to distance myself from that. However, the problem is we never really implement stage number two. We never really actually put some action behind it. We never actually say, okay, where now? What do I do now? Where do I build off from that point where now I'm going to distance myself from it? And what very often happens if you don't actually put both stages of freedom in, then you end up reverting even back before you distance yourself from that avera. For example, if someone finds it very hard not to eat certain food, and then they have a moment of clarity and they say, I don't want to, I'm gonna stop eating that food. But then they don't change anything about their life. They don't actually implement a new approach. They don't decide a new diet. They don't avoid that treif restaurant. They're going to end up with the same nisyonos. They're going to end up with the same problems. They're going to end up in the same situation as they were before they had that moment of clarity. And that moment of clarity will be nothing but a distant memory. So as a result, I think that if we really wanted to take this idea and we wanted to implement itself, if we really wanted to get freedom on an individual level, so I think the way to do that is really working on the second approach. You know, very often we quote all these Torah sources and we quote all these different things. But right now I'm going to quote a football podcast that I heard. So I heard in a football podcast, it's all about the team that I watch. It's called Tottenham Hotspur. There's a team. And years ago, I used to be an avid listener to podcasts. And they had once someone very, very interesting. I still have the podcast saved. It's very, very interesting. They had a sports psychologist on. And the sports psychologist was saying that how an individual who's an elite athlete, how could they really affect a game? At the end of the day, and for those of you who don't know, there's 11 players on either team. So if they're just one 22nd of the amount of people on the pitch, how could they really have such a true impact on the game? And not only that, but just because I have one really good player, does that really mean my team's going to win or not? So enough about the football. But either way, the guy said something very interesting. He said, all a person can do is control what's within their boundaries, what's within their job. For example, one player's goal can never be to win a league. The one player's goal can never be to drag their team up the table or to win a cup. It's impossible. Their goal can only be to fulfill their job in the best way. And the way that they do that is by implementing short, medium, and long-term goals. Pardon the pun of goals, I didn't mean that. But either way, the point is they have to work out that, is that next pass going to be correct? Is that next shot going to go in the right place? Is that next move in the team? Am I standing in the right place? Am I doing the right thing? In other words, that so much of whether a team wins or loses when it comes to sports or all these different things is actually completely unrelated to what we would say is the ultimate goal. We would say the ultimate goal of my team is to win. But if the players thought like that, they can never win. The way that a player or a player as a part of a team wins is by doing his job correctly. And when he does his job correctly and everyone else does their job correctly as a unit, that ends up that they win. So I think something very similar to us is very often we look at the end goal and we say, I'll tell you an interesting story. This Shabbos, we were in H. And someone was asking me, when it comes to them stopping doing a specific issue that they're focusing on, should I say my goal is to beat it and my goal is to destroy it and my goal is to get rid of it from my life completely? Or is my goal that just for now, I just need to beat it on this time and then we'll see it about the future? So I asked him, in the past, what's worked for you? In the past, he said, well, I used to think long term, I need to beat the thing off completely. So that means every time it came back to me and every time it fought me again and every time it attacked me and every time that it caused me issues, then I just got sad again because I thought I was over it. I thought I beat it. And then all of a sudden it's back. So I think it's the same thing. So I think it's a similar idea to what we're talking about now, which is this idea that when I'm working on what is the right thing to do? So very often I can have moments of clarity and moments of and darkness and moments of clarity and moments of darkness. And the way to translate that into long-term success is by focusing on the second part. Work out what the right thing for me to do in that moment is. Once again, going back to the soccer analogy, whether it's the right pass or the right move or the right fake or whatever it is. So the same thing is true with us. That there are so many times, I know in my own life also, where I just assume things will work out. I say, oh no, I don't want to do this anymore. And then I don't know, the example that I always use with my guys this year or next, I don't add the filter or I don't change my computer habits or I still sleep in my room with my phone or whatever the issue seems to be. But it requires some sort of change. Fundamentally, it requires some sort of action, right? There's an interesting Malbim in last week's parasha. The Malbim says that it says about the mitzvah of tefillin four and a half times in the Torah. And every time the way it talks about this mitzvah is that first you do your arm and then you do your head. So the Malbim points out, I don't understand. How many times can it teach me the same halacha? I know, you put your arm on and then you put your head tefillin. So it says, what's the point? It's telling you straight after it's rhyme, this week's parasha, it's telling you straight after all of the miracles and in parasha's book, straight after all the miracles, straight after everything, the only way that you're really going to crystallize this, the only way you're going to really turn it into your life is if you do some action with it. If you actually change your life in some way. There's a very famous Dvar Torah, which I think is one of my favorite ideas. And I think most people if you've ever heard me speak around this time of year, have heard me say it. But I think it's a very similar point. And I think with this, we'll maybe say a few ideas after that, and then we'll call it. So there was a study. There's a TV program in America called. I always forget which one's England and which one's America. I think in England it's called Secret Millionaire. I think in America it's called Undercover Boss. Is that right? So there was a famous study, there was a social experiment done on British Undercover Boss, where they took 10 CEOs of different companies and they literally made them sleep on the streets of London. And there was they literally put secret cameras in everywhere, but really they were alone. And they were really on the streets of London. They had no external help. They did one thing before they allowed them to go on the streets of London, that they found 10 homeless people that were willing to be coaches and to be mentors for these people, to show them where shelter is, to show them how they can get food, to show them how just to survive on the streets, because the streets could be rough. So they paired, so I don't know how they did this, but they paired off each of these millionaires with one of these poor people. And they didn't tell them that they were millionaires. They just said, there's a new guy moving into town. Do you mind looking after him? Do you mind showing him the ropes? Do you mind helping him out? So this went on for a week. And basically there were hidden cameras and they were mic'd up. And for about a week or so, there was a TV show where you were just watching these millionaires that have tens of millions of dollars in the bank, watching them roam around the streets of London. Now, that was a very interesting point, but really the main point was at the end. At the end of the week, each of the millionaires, each of the CEOs revealed themselves like they do in Undercover Boss, but instead of revealing themselves to the employees, here they revealed themselves to the homeless people. And they said, but surprise, and they took off all of their homeless gear, and they came with a suit and all shaved the next day. And they were like, by the way, we are CEOs of massive companies. So thank you so much for showing me around. Thank you so much for helping me. Listen, I'll give you anything. Just tell me what it is. I'll give you anything. So at this point, generally, when I'm staying over this idea, I ask people in the class, what do you think that they asked for? And people always say, I don't know, what would you say, a boat? People say a house. People say, give me your company. Give me all these different things. But generally, it's a very, very crazy idea. Out of the 10 people that were asked, 8 asked for things less than $150. Some asked for food. Some asked for accommodation for the next night or two. Some asked for blankets. The 2 people that asked for things over $150, one asked for a ring to marry his homeless girlfriend, and one of them asked for a car. He couldn't drive, and he didn't have any insurance, but he wanted a car to sleep in because he thought it would protect him. So the question is, what on earth is going on? How can these people, they had an out. They had an option. They had a way out. Why did they not take the opportunity? So there's a similar medrash in Parshas Shmos. And in Parshas Shmos, there's a similar medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he finds out he's Jewish, he goes out to see the plight of the Jewish people. And he asks the Jews in Egypt that are getting whipped, that are working. He says, by the way, my dad's Pharaoh, but I'm secretly one of you. I'll give you anything. What do you want? And one guy says, I want to be whipped less. So he says, taskmaster, stop whipping the guy. So the guy's like, what can I do? The son of Pharaoh has spoken. He goes to the next guy. What do you want? He says, I want to go home earlier. So, okay, fine. So you have an hour less work. You can go home an hour earlier. The next guy, what do you want? He says, I want to be able to see my kids. So fine. They'll have some sort of social services, arrange a visit to you and your kids, and so on and so forth. And once again, the Mefarshim asked, why did these people not just ask for freedom? This is one of the most influential people in the Egyptian empire. Why didn't they just say, I don't want to be slaves? I want to sit there with my feet up. The answer is, to both of the questions, both the homeless people in London and the slaves in Egypt, is they identified themselves as slaves. They identified themselves as homeless people. So when it came to these slaves, when it came to these homeless people, they could only think within the framework of a homeless person. What would a homeless person want on the streets of London? Oh, I know, blankets. Oh, I know, somewhere to stay. Oh, I know, the next hot meal. But only once they could break themselves out of the homeless mentality could they finally say, okay, now I need a job. Now I need somewhere to live. Now I need more money. It's the same thing with the Jewish people in Egypt. They were so stuck in their mindset. They were so stuck in the slave mindset. They just said, how can I make my life as a slave better? How can I lessen the blows of slavery? So I think, once again, this is a similar idea. The Mefarshim explain, how did the Jewish people, at the end of last week's Pasha, how did they break out of this mentality? The answer was that they did the Korban Pesach. They took the very thing that represented the society that was holding them in the back, and they killed it, and they got it out of their lives. So once again, we see that in order to get real freedom, you need 2 stages. You need, the first one is, I don't want to be a slave. And the second one is, I'm going to take that very thing that's holding me back that I'm a slave to, and I'm going to fundamentally change my relationship with that thing. I'm going to take it, whether it's my phone, and I'm going to smash it. I'm going to take that those foods that I can't stop eating, and I'm going to stop buying them. I'm going to get them out of my house. I'm going to take that I'm going to take my phone, and I'm not going to sleep in a room with it. So then I don't stay up watching X, Y, and Z all night. I stay Z now. I'm American. But either way, that's the point, that when freedom comes, when freedom is at risk, you need two stages to get out of it. You need that moment of clarity to say, this isn't who I am. I'm not a slave. I'm not bound by these actions. I'm not bound by these thoughts. And the second stage is, okay, so now I need a plan about how to climb out, how to break myself out of that boundaries. The Mitzvah Sharm explains, that just like Pharaoh, when he saw that the Jewish people were thinking about breaking out, were thinking about freedom, were thinking about an alternative life to freedom, what did he do? He increased the work. He made them busy again. He got them back into it. And very often, that's the same issue that we have, that after we've had that moment of clarity, we just get busy again. And we just get busy with that same thing that's holding us back. And we forget about it. And we forget about that moment of clarity until we're back being slaves again. And we haven't even realized that we've gone backwards. We haven't even realized that we gave up an opportunity to be better people, to be completely free people. We didn't realize that we gave up the opportunity for greatness. And then unfortunately, just through being busy, we lose it. By the way, you should know that the same thing is true in yeshiva. There are so many people that are so busy learning that they don't have time to be a better person, that they don't have time to think about Hashem, that they don't have time to daven well, they don't have time to focus on brachot. You could be in a very frum environment and still just be busy, and as a result, you're not working on yourself, then you're not growing. Now, obviously, that's not the best, and you can obviously use yeshiva to grow, but I'm saying the same thing is true anywhere. In other words, this is not everyone in secular college, people that are living abroad, people. This isn't an attack on those people. This is a critique on human nature, that everyone, no matter where you are, the more busy you are, without having a structured plan about how you're going to save yourself, how you're going to get freedom. Unfortunately, very often people succumb to taking steps backwards and actually re-enslaving themselves by stealth. They did without even knowing it. I think that very often, that everyone knows this famous line that people attribute to Einstein, which is, insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I think generally this is people's approach when it comes to Musa. When it comes to self-improvement, when it comes to working on yourself, we fall foul of doing this. We try something, it didn't work. So instead of being more ingenuitive, or instead of trying to think more out the box, we just try the same thing again. And then we screw up again. And we're like, I guess I didn't try hard enough. And then we do the same thing again. Right? Once again, this is we're using our moments of clarity. We have that first stage, we have that Pesach. But we haven't necessarily converted it into that shvus, into that idea that we can really take firm actions into that next step of doing what's right and taking a firm step to actualizing that idea.